Well, this is one of the nights we're live again.
Yes, sir.
We're teaching you. We play the service on Sunday nights. And Monday night was teaching, and Tuesday night was teaching. Tonight we're live. Wednesday, isn't it? Question is, which week? Now, I have two audiences, I guess three. One that I don't care about. They just come and go. And they're interested people that tune in for the teaching. And then there's my congregants from this chair on various media outlets. I've pastored my church 29 years this first Sunday in November. I must have started when I was about 7. Something like that. Seems like forever. But tonight I have some things to say to my congregants. So you channel surfers, just go on by and come back later. I'll be talking about something you might be interested in. But my congregants need to make about 100 more reservations. And quit counting on the fact that because you're known, you'll get waved in. I want your reservations for Sunday. For you that know what Secret 16 is, which is something you don't know, which is a way of saying, if you don't know our method of doing things, you shouldn't participate in Secret 16. I want to wake you up. It ends at Christmas. I've been teaching about the faith of Jesus. He made a commitment. He stuck to it. You can't have the faith of Jesus and not keep your commitments, because that's what it's all about. I need to talk to those of my congregation that are volunteers as ushers. You've been slacking off. We don't have enough ushers, because I still got old guard people in charge of the ushers, and the old guard people solve the problem their way instead of raising their hand and asking me for help. So I'm putting somebody else in charge Sunday that will tell me before the problem gets out of hand. You're just dumb sheep. Now, you know who you are that have made commitments to be ushers. Now, get on the phone tonight and renew your commitments and be prepared to be called for ushering. There isn't a man in this congregation that shouldn't usher at least once a month. Huh? Yeah. This is a working church. Don't want any hangers-on. Don't want anybody that comes to church to get blessed and catered to. We have 24 hours a day teaching, round the clock, 24/7. Internet, radio, satellite, big dish, C-SPAN. And I want to start warning some of you. I think I'm going to drop the C-band when the current contract runs out. So I want all of you across the nation that count on satellite, why should I pay over $100, $100,000 a month for a C-band which is rapidly being analog, outmoded, broadcast? Why should I do that when for $30,000 you can buy a less than $500 dish and get me digital? I got 29 years with my congregation. You're spoiled. I'm supposed to provide everything. Now you better wake up, because I got this digital KU band satellite for our family. You hearing me?
Yes, sir.
Now I suggest you get a KU band dish. Nobody's ever going to take that from us. That's for the in-house members of this congregation. I mean, I started out on satellite between Playboy and some other triple X rated. I don't even think what channel it was. I was in between them. So as they jumped from boobs to boobs, they had to go past me. And those that had something other than a boob head stayed with me. And we've been all these years on satellite. You can scan the skies and go back and forth. KU band, you're locked in on me. Now, don't push me to do that. If this teaching, 24 hours a day in your home, not worth you investing $500, it's not worth me paying $100,000+ a month to make it easy for you. Is that straight talk enough?
Yes, sir.
And again, we get ratings. I'm told we're the only religious oriented program in the sense that we teach from the Bible that gets ratings in this city in Los Angeles. Those are not the people I'm talking to. Again, you spoiled Los Angeles members. You have been the beneficiary these 29 years of me always trying to make it easy for you. And in return, I only ask you to do one thing. Get your asteroid to the cathedral on Sunday morning. You don't have to come to the cathedral to be a Christian. You don't even have to come there to be taught. You can turn on the TV every night from 10 to 11. Sunday from 7 to 11. The only exception, Saturday. If that making it easy for you is going to keep you from coming to the cathedral, I can shut that off too. That cuts off about $8,000 a day. Now, I don't raise money. We don't have projects and telethons, and I am the only person even associated with Bible teaching. It looks in the camera and says, don't send any money until I first teach you. Then you send what you think it's worth. But the congregants have already made that decision. We exist doing what Paul said to Timothy he must do to teach the people how to behave in the church of the living God, the pillar and the ground of the truth. We've built a pillar and a ground to elevate the truth. And 24 hours a day, it's around the world. Satellite, radio, internet. But I am sensitive. I don't really like to associate with people that have bad value judgment. I begin to feel more and more like a dinosaur every year. We build a generation that can't listen to more than three words at once. A me first generation that goes to the boob tube to be titillated. I started 29 years ago. I can tell you this, it wouldn't be a Discovery Channel if it weren't for me. I'm the guy that proved that people were interested in things like the pyramids and ancient history. They wouldn't risk it until I proved people were interested. You couldn't even turn to a KCET or whatever it is in your town when I was here, starting out. Everything was false and artificial. You'd never see a camera. It was all artificial. I'm the guy who started reality TV.
Yes, sir.
Now, I've been here so long, I am a dinosaur. But I started out saying, I will not cater to Nielsen ratings. I will not suffer fools. And I'm going to teach. Been doing it for a long time. And build a congregation that every so often has to get kicked in the tail by me. That I'm sensitive. I don't like to be taken for granted. Don't have to raise money. Don't worry about making me rich. I came to town that way. PhD from Stanford. Could call the Stanford placement office today. And unlike science or other fields, Aristotle hasn't said a word since I left Stanford. Plato hasn't said a word since I left Stanford. Whitehead hasn't said a word since I left Stanford. Niebuhr hasn't said a word. Philosophy is a wonderful field. The field doesn't pass you by. And I could teach. I've taught in a college. 9-10 hours a week. A sabbatical every seventh year. A bunch of gooey-eyed students to clean your office and kneel at your feet and think they're the luckiest people on earth for paying tuition that's out of sight to listen to you drone on. Write an article once or twice a year. I have an easy time. I believe in what I teach. Don't think I'm right, know I'm right. I have little tolerance for people too stupid to know what they're receiving. I'm not on a popularity contest. You come to the cathedral, I ain't on trial, you are. You don't get in without a pass. If you don't sit there respectful and pay attention, we show you the door. You come wanting to learn at a college and university level class in the Bible, you're welcome. Not a public service. You don't get in without a pass. These are my telephones. I pay for them. I don't brook criticism. You give me a critical comment, my voice of faith, throw it in the wastebasket. I'm here to teach. If you have questions, they'll deliver it to me. And I think those that have been watching will say, we've been doing that. We open with a song. I teach. We close with a song. Don't try to convert anybody. Can't stand conversion evangelists. My Bible says no man comes to the Father save the Spirit draw him. Somebody comes up to me in a parking lot and says, if you've been born again, I'll say, not if I'm going to look like you. Leave me alone. They send me every sinner in town. We don't have a bunch of people primed to pounce on you like a scalp hunter. I just teach. I believe every man has a right to work out and every woman their own relationship with God. Between them and God, all I do is provide you data. Don't put me in a box with a TV evangelist. That's an epithet that makes the words nigger and kike seem kind. I'm not a TV evangelist. I teach. If you want to be taught, go to another channel. Tonight, I've told you, I'm talking to my congregation. Now wake up, congregants. Some of you have listened to me for more than 20 years, and you're learning. You still didn't understand some of the most basic words parodied around with traditional Christianity. Having said that, I'm going to continue this little. I just thought I'd say that to you. Need volunteers for ushers, Voices of Faith early Sunday morning. I'm still looking for three more. And the seven I set out for, and the congregation knows exactly what I'm talking about. You understand each other?
Yes, sir.
If you understand me, I'm sure they do. I was given a book for my birthday. Change the subject now. The Portable Curmudgeon. Curmudgeon. The Curmudgeon. I don't know if they were trying to say you are one, but I think I just probably defined it in the last few minutes. Dictionary defined curmudgeon as a churlish, irascible fellow. A cantankerous old codger. That's what I am. Been at it long enough. Don't care what anybody thinks. Been investigated by everybody, cursed by everybody. Can't stand the news media. Bunch of jerks. Talking heads. Lose their cue card. They don't know what to do. I guess they're tired of their little cute exchanges among themselves. Just give me the news. Or quit defrauding me by putting that sign up and saying it's news. Can't stand bureaucrats. I'm a curmudgeon. The origin of the word is unknown. I probably invented it. But it might come from an old Scottish word. Well, I'm Scottish. That meant murmur or mumble. I don't do that. They're just sensitive, soft-hearted, hiding their vulnerability beneath a crust of misanthropy. They ease the pain by turning hurt into humor. Well, I don't think I'm there yet. I'll try that. But this book is organized by the alphabet. And I went through the A's and the B's the other night. And I thought, well, you know, this sort of entertains me. And since I'm paying the bill for this program, why should I sit here and entertain you when I entertain myself? I'm going to try to get $8,000 out of entertainment for myself tonight. In the current political arena, the C's include the word Congress. Mark Twain. See, these are quotes from curmudgeons. Man, I've laid down 29 years of them. I wonder why I'm not in here. Mark Twain. It could probably be shown. Oh, I see. All these curmudgeons are dead. Mark Twain. It could probably be shown by facts and figures. You know, this is the only TV program in the world. I don't have a prayer of an idea what I'm going to do till I sit down here. It could probably be shown by facts and figures that there is no distinctively Native American criminal class except Congress. Conscience. I'm in the seas. You figured that out? The inner voice that warns us that someone may be looking. California is talking a lot about conservatives. Ambrose Bierce. These are supposed to be famous curmudgeons. They go all the way back to Plutarch. Conservative. A statesman who is enamored of existing evils as distinguished from a liberal who wishes to replace them with others. Now listen, it's pretty subtle. Conversation. Alfred Hitchcock. Conversation is the enemy of good wine and food. James McNeil Whistler. If other people are going to talk, conversation becomes impossible. I'm liking these curmudgeons better all the time. Critics. That's a C word, isn't it? Critic, a noun. Ambrose Bierce, he's been quoted before. Critic, a noun. A person who boasts himself hard to please because nobody wants to please him. Well, that'll hit you after a while. Brendan Behan. Critics. Critics are like eunuchs in a harem. They know how it's done. They've seen it done every day, but they're unable to do it themselves. Channing Pollock. The critic is a legless man who teaches running. Sir Thomas Beecham. He gets right to the point. Critics. Drooling, driveling, doleful, depressing, dropsical drips. George Bernard Shaw on a drama critic. A man who leaves no turn unstoned. This is subtle. John Osborne. Maybe it isn't subtle. John Osborne. Critics are a dissembling, dishonest, contemptible race of men. Asking a working writer what he thinks about critics is like asking a lamppost what it feels about dogs. Cynic. That's a C word, isn't it? A cynic is a man who, when he smells flowers, looks around for a coffin. I think I should do that again, H.L. Mencken. A cynic is a man who, when he smells flowers, looks around for a coffin. I'll hit you tomorrow. You're going to curmudgeonize me with that kind of response. Some of these curmudgeons criticize famous people. Oscar Levant on Doris Day. I knew her before she was a virgin. Now, I'm not sure if he's meaning the biblical word no or not. Woody Allen on death. If not, then I'm afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens. Since all this political stuff's going on, let's talk about democracy. Aristotle. He's famous, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
Democracy's a D word, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
A democracy is a government in the hands of men of low birth, no property, and vulgar employments. John Simon. Democracy encourages the majority to decide things about which the majority is blissfully ignorant. And politicians more so. Any historian knows this country was not formed to be a democracy. It was a federal republic. Minorities have no rights protection in a democracy. It's the tyranny of the majority. This country never was intended to be a democracy. And we hear politicians tell us that those poor, ignorant people in Iraq will embrace us to give them democracy. And give them anarchy. George Bernard Shaw, democracy is the substitution of election by the incompetent many for appointment by the corrupt few. Oscar Wilde, democracy is the bludgeoning of the people by the people for the people. Lawrence J. Peter, democracy is the process by which the people are free to choose the man who will get the blame. H.L. Mencken, the worship of jackals by jackasses. James Russell Lowell, democracy gives every man the right to be his own oppressor. I like this one. Diagnosis. That's a D word, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Damn right. Diagnosis by Karl Kraus. One of the most common of all diseases is diagnosis. Diplomacy. The patriotic art of lying for one's country. Diplomacy by Mark Twain. He's always good. The principle of give and take is the principle of diplomacy. Give one, take ten. Dishonesty. Mark Twain again. There's one way to find out if a man is honest. Ask him. If he says yes, you know he's dishonest. Distrust. Tennessee Williams, we have to distrust each other. It's our only defense against betrayal. Doctors, I like this doctor. That's a D word, isn't it? A doctor's, George Bernard Shaw, a doctor's reputation, unlike some preachers, I give credit when I quote. George Bernard Shaw, a doctor's reputation is made by the number of eminent men who die under his care. Benjamin Franklin, now there's a curmudgeon for you. God heals, and the doctor takes the fee. Denis Diderot, the best doctor is the one you run for and can't find. I think that's getting too close to home. Voltaire, doctors are men who prescribe medicines of which they know little, to cure diseases of which they know less, and human beings of whom they know nothing. Anton Chekhov, don't know this curmudgeon, doctors are just the same as lawyers. The only difference is that lawyers merely rob you, whereas doctors rob you and kill you too. As I said the other night, the opinions of this book are not necessarily the opinions of the reader, but I'm enjoying them. Winston Churchill, on drinking, I've taken more out of alcohol than alcohol's taken out of me. Economists, here, George Bernard Shaw again. If all economists were laid end to end, they would not reach a conclusion. On a newspaper editor, Gene Fowler, an editor should have a pimp for a brother, so he'd have someone to look up to. I mean, I got lots of candidates for that. I can just fill in the blank for place of editor. Enemies. Heinrich Heine. Whatever comes out of him ought to be good. One should forgive one's enemies, but not before they are hanged. George Orwell on England and the English. England is the most class-ridden country under the sun. It's a land of snobbery and privilege, ruled largely by the old and the silly. D.H. Lawrence. He didn't think too much of Englishmen. Curse the blasted jelly-bone swines, the slimy belly-wriggling invertebrates, the miserable sodding rotters, the flaming sods, the sniveling, dribbling, dithering, palsied, pulseless lot that make up England today. They've got white of an egg in their veins and their spunk is that watery. It's a marvel they can breed. Why was I born an Englishman? Exercise. Henry Ford. Exercise is bunk. If you're healthy, you don't need it, and if you're sick, you shouldn't take it. And W.C. Fields. And that's a cigar smoking. Cantankerous old. Candidate for this book. And they entitled this page A Flagon of Fields. Once during Prohibition, I was forced to live for days on nothing but food and water. Then he says, a woman drove me to drink. I never even had the courtesy to thank her. I always keep a supply of stimulant handy in case I see a snake, which I also keep handy. What contemptible scoundrel stole the cork from my lunch? My illness, he says, is due to my doctor's insistence that I drink milk, a whitish fluid they force down helpless babies. He was an economist. The cost of living, he says, has gone up another dollar a quart. I myself exercise self-control, he said, and never touch any beverage stronger than gin before breakfast. France. And the French, that ought to be good. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
A relatively small France. And the French. A relatively small, this is William F. Buckley, Jr. I can see him reared back in his chair now in his TV program. At least he had an intelligent one. A relatively small and eternally quarrelsome country in Western Europe, fountainhead of rationalist political manias, militarily impotent, historically inglorious during the past century, democratically bankrupt, communist, infiltrated from top to bottom. That's, France and Germany, they're our friends now, you know. France is the only country where the money falls apart and you can't tear the toilet paper. I like that one. I think I should read that again. Everybody here got it, but there may be a few that just caught part of it as they zoomed by. Billy Wilder. France is the only country where the money falls apart and you cannot tear the toilet paper. Better the first time. Samuel Johnson. What I gained by being in France was learning to be better satisfied with my own country. D.H. Lawrence, he didn't think much of the Englishman, so here he is on the French. I would have loved it, France, that is, without the French. Ernest Hemingway. Everything is on such a clear financial basis in France. It is the simplest country to live in. No one makes things complicated by becoming your friend for any obscure reason. If you want people to like you, you have only to spend a little money. Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Frenchmen are like gunpowder. Each by itself smutty and contemptible, but mass them together and they are terrible indeed. Franz Lebowitz. To the French, lying is simply talking. Same guy. The French, Germans with good food. Mark Twain on funerals. That's an F word. I did not attend his funeral, but I wrote a nice letter saying I approved it. Get on the telephone. Now, I've been talking for a little over 30 minutes, and it's time for you to talk. If you don't get an answer the first time, there's calls are pouring in. Just, if it rings seven times, hang up and call, and dial again. It's my nickel. And because the phones are strung around, and everybody's busy right now, but if you just keep calling, it'll ring in front of one of them just when they finish with another call. I want about, as I said, about another 100 reservations for Sunday. You that wait until Saturday to do it, I want you to get on the phone as you promised and make your reservation for Sunday. Secret 16 is coming to a close. In a few weeks, we'll start the tabernacle period, and you old-timers know what that means. 29 years I can talk in code to my congregation. The rest of the week probably we'll be teaching this hour. But tonight we're live as I check the temperature of the listeners and do what I have to do with my congregants in the middle of the week. So get on the telephone, talk to your pastor now. Come on. Now here's a call from Linwood, Washington. Just wanted to call and ask if we're to add our tabernacle as a secret 16 pledge, yes. Anything above the tithe counts for secret 16. And since it's 2003, one of these nights I'm going to ask for about 300 of you to see if you've learned anything about faith in what I've been teaching. and turn your 203 into 2003. Let that settle in. And follow your first impression. Sit down, everybody. I'm going to teach now. No more calls. The other night, last time we were live, I said, we don't raise money like other people. We don't have telethons, marathons, don't appeal to emotions by hoping for a famine and start a activity to raise funds for the famine and rake off administrative costs up front. I just teach. C.S. Lewis said, God to be God has no needs. So how disgraceful that the church has cheapened God by raising money for need. If you're going to do that, give to a charity. We're behind as a church. No church in giving to charitable activities in this community and around the world. We don't have to create a department as a charity, as a means of raising money. Don't give your old cars to me. You want to give an expression of value, give your new car. Don't give your old cars to get a tax deduction. Give it to the charities. They'll give you something to you, the charity. We're not a charity. I fought the battle in California, and my staff member stayed in Senator Petras' office, and I helped write that bill via that staff member. It changed the law in California and made it clear that a church is not a charity unless it wants to be. They're not a charity by virtue of being a church. My people give to God for God's reasons. And we were teaching the other night from Galatians 6, let him that's taught in the word communicates what the King James says. The word in the Greek is koinonia. Jointly share with him that taught you in all good things. And went on to point out that the context has that sowing to the Spirit, and the Spirit of life reaps a harvest of life eternal. Don't give for any reason other than what Jesus said, lay up treasures in heaven, or the many other ways in which God stooped and humbled himself to let us participate in his program. I'm on a one-man crusade to bring dignity back to giving. Now, the Philippian letter has been called Paul's joy letter. All Bible scholars know that. The Philippian letter from this old tiger who suffered so much for the gospel was his joy letter. He writes to him, first chapter, second verse, after identifying himself and his fellow servants as the writer, to the saints at Philippi, grace be unto you. Verse 3, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. More accurately, every time their name comes up, or every time he thinks of them, or every time that he has or encounters mention of them, they have a special place. Always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy. To think about them made him happy. For your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Now in Galatians, that word, communicate, was koinonia. Now here in Philippians, the word is fellowship. Let me give it to you in the Greek. In view, epitikoinonia, same word, translated communicate in Galatians, koinonia, translated fellowship here. It's joint participation. It comes from the word that designates, now, they used to call it New Testament Greek. Subsequent archaeological finds determined that the New Testament was written for the most part in the colloquial language of the day, called Koine Greek, held in common, jointly participated in. He's talking about giving in view of the participation of you. Now, he writes this letter because he's just received a gift in prison. He can't get out of prison and take that gift and go down to the 7-Eleven or who's the rib people? What's the rib restaurant? Tony Romo's. He can't even go to a fancy restaurant. Can't send out and get Jack in the Box. He didn't need the money. What's he going to do with it? Chained to a post in a little cistern down in prison? But he knew that his message had taken, and the sun never sets today anywhere in this world that someone isn't teaching the words of Paul. And this church in Philippi that he founded 11 years earlier and hadn't been there since, throughout all of his ministry, supported him because they wanted to share in what he was doing. And when the rewards are handed out at the judgment seat of Christ in that great day, not the white throne judgment where the sinners are cast out, and the hypocrites that want to get into their works, but that final act before time is arranged, a new heavens and new earth created, the judgment seat of Christ. See, not all the rewards in heaven are the same. And as they name Paul, who has accrued his rewards until the last event of time, that's why the judgment seat of Christ is last. And when his name is peeled out, names that we don't know from Philippi will share equally, because they participated with him in the euangelion, you good, angelion, the message, the news, the gospel, from the first day until now, the King James says. From the first day until now. Give me the Greek. Archai. You want the first. Protes. Himeris. Acri. To noon. Not noon. To noon. A form that can't translate into the English without being awkward. What he's saying, I thank God every time you come in my mind, every remembrance of you, every mention of you, with joy, in view of the participation, koinonia, joint participation, of you in the gospel, by supporting me as I give the gospel, Paul is saying, from the first day until to noon, T-O-U, the now, from the first day until the now, because the now is the gift that they've been doing for 11 years, arrives delivered by Epaphroditus to his prison cell. From the beginning, they had been supporting and participating with him in his gospel preaching. And he thanks God of every remembrance because they participated from the first day until this one that just arrived in the now. Let's go to the end of this chapter, or this book. Philippians 4. You there?
Sir.
How can you be there? You got a camera in your hand. Philippians 4. Verse 15. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, No church communicated with me. You know, ecclesia is what he says. No gathering of the outcalled ones. Ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church or assembly communicated, koinonia, with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. Not because I desire a gift. He said earlier, I rejoice in the Lord greatly, talking about the now, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am. King James ends therewith, which is in italics, not there. You don't have to fall in love with the prison cell. But he's learned in whatsoever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, know how to abound. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. So I don't need your offering. Notwithstanding, ye have well done that ye did communicate, koinonia, with my affliction. Not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. I have all and abound. I'm full, having received of Epaphroditus the things that were sent from you. And then this interpreter of Old Testament types says that that offering sent to him from the church at Philippi, which he didn't need, but is characteristic of what they have done from the beginning for 11 years, sharing their gifts with him in response to what he had brought to them, the gospel, and now beyond that, by communicating or sharing with him and continuing to do it, even if he doesn't need it, they will share in the eternal things. The most blessed offering of the Old Testament in terms of God's perspective was the burnt offering, because it was voluntary. The sin offering was required. The burnt offering was voluntary. The very name burnt offering is an attempt in the English to translate the sweet savor offering of the Old Testament, where all of the offering was burned on the altar to ascend as a sweet savor to God. And Paul, as he interpreted the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the types of the Old Testament, now gives a New Testament meaning of the burnt offering. What they were doing with Paul, communicating, jointly sharing, is an odor of sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God, and then a promise that's quoted out of context by the hundreds of thousands of preachers, never in context. My God shall supply all your needs, not everybody's, the Philippians, who communicated with him, who jointly shared in the gospel, and thus would share in the reward, and that's a sweet savor smell to them, but icing on the cake even here, my God shall supply all your need, you Philippians, according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. That's a biblical reason for giving. Just thought I'd remind you of it. Go on telephone.